I'm just going to sit up here so we can kind of have a conversation. Okay. And let's start by just turning our attention within for a couple of moments and to be quiet, interiorized. It's useful to be sit upright, to be attentive and poised and relaxed. And we open our mind and our essence of being, our heart, to the infinite. And we acknowledge ultimate reality, God, higher power, however we conceive of this essence. And we acknowledge that we are a unit, a ray, a viewpoint of the pure essence of ultimate reality, one with God, inseparable, whole, perfect already. Feel that. And we acknowledge the saints and the sages of all enlightenment spiritual traditions. And we honor the divinity of every person. We see each and every one as an expression of this divine essence. And we allow our attention to effortlessly flow within. Can be useful to put our awareness, our attention at the forehead or the top of the head, the spiritual eye, the third eye center, and to simply notice the breath. We just feel it cool as we inhale, a little warmer as we exhale, and we just sit and observe the breath and allow the thoughts to subside. Any ideas, thoughts, concepts, memories, whatever bubbles up in the mind, we simply just disregard it, let it go, and come back to watching the breath until we become very established, very focused, very centered in this moment, here, now, simply aware of being. Breath rises and falls of its own accord, and we just notice it rising and falling with it. As we watch the breath and learn to disregard the thoughts that bubble up, we may notice that each time we finish exhaling, there's a pause. And when we finish inhaling, there's a brief pause. And in that pause, the mind becomes clear. For just a moment, we are aware, bright, conscious, without thought. And we can learn to nurture that space of thoughtless awareness until it dominates our consciousness, until we rest in pure awareness, non-thinking, bright, clear, fully conscious. So each day we can sit and practice in this way until we become firmly established in this awareness of our true nature as pure consciousness. And before we conclude our practice each day, it's useful to take a moment to be reminded that our mind and our consciousness is a portion of mass consciousness, a portion of God, a ray or a viewpoint of one mind. And so whatever we hold in our mind and our consciousness is also held in the mind of God. And so we can take a moment to send a blessing to all individuals, to every person, 7.5 billion people on planet Earth, all our brothers and sisters, and those who have predeceased us, wherever they may be in time and space. We send them all a blessing. We wish them well, everyone. We see each and every one as a bright, shining, life-giving spirit, earthless, deathless, immortal, identical to ourself. And we see them prosperous, fulfilled, radiantly joyful, content, established in peace, and awake, fully awake to the nature of what they are and their relationship with God. And so we love them and we bless them and we wish them well, everyone. And finally, we feel good about ourselves. We feel ourselves to be on friendly terms with nature, with emerging events and circumstances, and with God's grace, that is the unplanned good that comes to us unearned. And so we feel good about ourselves. And we are reminded that everything is now and always in divine order. And so for this and for all of our many, many blessings, we give heartfelt thanks. Om. Peace. Amen. So it's useful for us to practice this meditation, this opportunity to sort of allow the mind to calm down, the thoughts to be quiet, the memories to subside, the expectations and ideas about the future. All these things, we can just let them subside and be quiet. And when they become very quiet, we become awake, aware that our nature is consciousness, that we are the witness, the seer, the observer, always. And this is what we have always been and what we always will be, you see. When we were little children, when we were very small, we were still the observer, the witness. We can remember what it was like to be a small child, and we were always us. External, the circumstances, the events, the form, all these things change, and they constantly will. It's the nature of this expressive reality. But behind that, we've always been us. We've always been looking out of these eyes. We've always had this same point of view, this same perspective, and this has never changed. So, and the wise seers and sages of ancient times gave us some clues about how it is that what our main purpose is, what our goal, what life is about. You know, oftentimes we ask ourselves, what is all this for? What is it about? What does it mean? And so they told us, it's very simple. There are four main goals, four objectives that every life should have, everyone should have in life. The first is In Sanskrit, the word is called dharma, that is right living. Second is artha, that is wealth. Third is kama, that is to fulfill our desires easily. And the fourth is moksha, which is liberation, full freedom. So each of us is designed to accomplish these four goals. Now the first, dharma, this is right living, and this means that we live in harmony with life, that there is an expressive aspect of ultimate reality. This expressive aspect has an intelligence, it's intelligently organized, it has order, and it, in its expression, it becomes all of life. And this expressive aspect of ultimate reality we call God. So we have a word for that, you know, and words are just symbols that point to something. So we say, you know, flower. Flower is just a word, but this is an experience. This is an event. This is a happening, you see. So in the same way, this expressive aspect of ultimate reality, what is coming into expression, manifesting, unfolding, this is God. And this God has this inherent intelligence. We look around everywhere that we see in nature. We look through history. We look at ourselves and the way we're made. Everything has this inherent intelligence to it. It knows how to do what it's doing without being pushed around, without being manipulated, without being told. It just does it. So the trees grow, and when it gets cold, some of the trees lose their leaves and it falls off and they take a rest for the winter. And then in the springtime, when the temperature's right and the amount of sunlight is right, the intelligence of the tree puts out leaves, blossoms, and then in the summer it puts out fruit. And these things happen inherently because of the intelligence and the order of this expressive reality. And there isn't anybody that's pushing buttons and flipping switches and making these things happen. They happen because there is an intelligence built into the system. In the same way, there's an intelligence built into you. You are doing a million different processes right now. Your cells are metabolizing breakfast and turning whatever you ate last into you. And breathing, regulating your breath, regulating your heartbeat. The immune system is, you know, running around and making sure that none of those little rascals are taking over and creating problems inside the body. All these processes, all these things are happening, and who's doing that? Who's pulling the switches? Who's making sure that you have just the right amount of blood circulating, that you're taking the right number of breaths, that your temperature is regulated? Who's doing that? You are. The inherent intelligence of you is making all these things happen, and you're kind of going along for the ride, you know? So we look at this inherent intelligence, this order principle that is obvious everywhere in nature and within ourself, and we say, well, what is dharma? Dharma is moving in harmony and cooperating with these forces, this intelligent force, this expressive aspect we call God. So coming into harmony, seeing how things are working. This expressive aspect is constantly evolving. It's an evolutionary process. So it never stays the same. It's never constant. It's always changing, always evolving, and always moving in the direction of awakening, of complexity, of more interesting stuff. We can look over the last couple hundred years at our history on the planet and see where we've gone from being, very basically an agrarian society, moving into an industrial society, and now moving into an information-based society. Things have they've constantly become more complex. We know much more about how the world works, about how energy works. You know, this area got electricity in about 1920, sometime between 1920 and 1925. Before that, no lights, you know, no toasters, no blenders, no television came along in the 1950s. cell phones, what is now our go-to communication device, came from Steve Jobs in 2005. The world has changed many times, and it's evolving in this evolutionary way. It's evolving in a way that is supportive and nurturing for itself, coming out of the inherent intelligence of itself. And we can learn to cooperate with that. We can learn to observe how things are working and then work with them. So part of Dharma is noticing what's happening in these evolutionary processes and moving in harmony with it. The other part of Dharma is noticing that we are made in a special way, each one of us. So we have 7.5 billion job slots on the planet right now. They're all full. And each one of them is unique. If we stood up all 7.5 billion people in a line, and it'd be a pretty long line, if we stood them all up in a line, you could tell the difference between every single one. There's no two that are made alike. Even identical twins are different. So we can see the difference between every single individual. In the same way, every single individual is wired up, is made in a way that is unique, that allows them to offer their service, whatever the quality, whatever they have to share in life in their own special, unique way. And so we look around. It's always been remarkable to me to look around and say, wow, isn't it interesting that everybody that's born at the same time I was, 1947, by the way, it was a very good year, you know, this is kind of a classic now. Everybody that was born the year that I was born didn't decide to be truck drivers. You know, we don't have a whole generation of people that all wanted to be truck drivers. Some wanted to be engineers, some wanted to run companies, some thought, you know, I'm going to serve by working in a grocery store and stocking shelves and unloading lumber, sitting at a drawing board and drafting and making blueprints. All these different functions, all these things have to be done, and there's just enough people to do the things that need to be done. We know that because they're all being done, you see. Somebody's growing our food, somebody's making our clothes, somebody's providing transportation, communication. Everything that we need, individually, everything that we need is being provided for us. And it's being provided by all these individuals that find what they're doing to be interesting, to be fulfilling. The people do what they do, the doctors and the lawyers and the Indian chiefs and the artists and the truck drivers, all these people do this because it's meaningful to them. It makes sense. They're attracted to this for some reason, in some way, and this is part of the Dharma. So we find the things that we can do well, that serve our purposes, that we find fulfilling, and we do those things. And we don't worry about what other people are doing. They're following their Dharma. You know, there was a time when I was much younger when I thought, wow, wouldn't it be great to be the president of a multinational, you know, super company, making $1 billion a year and all that. And today I'm much, much wiser because I realize that I wouldn't like that job. That job's too much responsibility and working much too hard. You know, I enjoy what I do, and what I do very well. And so it's fulfilling. I wake up in the morning, I can't wait to get back to work. And I go to bed at night because I know I need sleep and rest so I can be efficient tomorrow to do my job again. So I drag myself to bed at night because I know I need to get the rest, you see. But the rest of the time, I'm engaged in what I do because I like it. It's fulfilling. Makes my heart sing, you see. So Dharma means that we find the things that we do well, and we do them well. And we move in harmony with this larger process, this larger unfolding reality, this expressive reality. We move in harmony with it. We look at the way it's unfolding and moving, and we work with it. together with it. So this is the first of our goals in life, is to live a dharmic life, to be in harmony all the time. Second, artha, wealth. And so this means, number one, that it's okay to have things. We should have easily, we should be able to accomplish our goals and have the security of a home, you know, shelter, food, a job that we do that we feel good about, where we can offer our service. We should have useful, harmonious relationships. We should have respect. I mean, we should expect people to respect us as we respect them. So all this is part of this artha, that is to have what we need to be prosperous. And sometimes in our spiritual conversation, individuals have this idea that somehow there's a conflict between wealth and having things and being spiritual. You know, if we're really spiritual, we shouldn't aspire to have all this stuff and nice things, and that's just foolishness. You know, this universe is expressive and it's very prosperous. You just look around. You try to cut down all these trees, which they did, by the way, back in the 1940s, clear cut everything, and it's all back. You know, clear cut a field and you watch. Next year, there's stuff growing out there. It doesn't stop. Nothing will stop life. Life is inherently prosperous. And we're part of life. And so we should be prosperous too. It's okay. And so we should have permission for ourselves to be wealthy, happy, to be comfortable, to live in the circumstances and the events and the conditions that are ideal for us. That are ideal for us. Now, you know, I'm a very simple person, and I don't need a $1 million house and servants and, you know, a garage with 18 cars and lots of all that stuff. I don't need all that. So what I need, my needs are met, and I have what I need. And each of us can find what we need and see that our needs are met. We may be very simple. We may need a little cabin. You know, I spent some time living in a little 600-square-foot cabin out in the woods, and it was a wonderful experience, you know. And at that time, that was all I needed. So we should find what we need and have our needs met easily. Like I say, we should have shelter, we should have food, good food, wholesome food. You know, the stuff that feeds our system and keeps us well and happy and healthy. So it's okay. So wealth is this second aspect. The third thing is kama. This means to have our desires easily met, our life-enhancing desires. That is, whatever will make us feel good. It's okay to feel good. It's okay to have pleasure. It's okay to enjoy life. This is kama. And kama means, very basically, to have our life-enhancing desires easily met. How are our life-enhancing desires easily met? Well, we work in harmony. Again, this is part of Dharma. We work in harmony with natural laws. And one of the natural laws is whatever we hold in mind and consciousness, whatever picture we have, whatever concept, idea, picture we have with feeling, puts a program, sends an order to the universe that, unless it's altered in some way, has to manifest. So if we picture something, for example, very practical, you know, our car is wearing out, we need a new car. And so we imagine the ideal car for us, a big giant Humvee that gets 10 miles to the gallon and has tires that cost $400 each and takes up an amazing amount of space on the road, and we can't find a place to park. Maybe a big Humvee is what our desire is of how we see ourselves. Or maybe it's a little zippy sports car. You know, whatever it happens to be, we see ourselves, imagine that vehicle, and then we feel ourselves to be in it. We feel ourselves, this is mine. I own this. It's wonderful to drive this big, giant car. I look down on everybody on the road. And anybody who runs into me, at their own peril, because I'm immortal, you know, I'm impervious here. We imagine and feel ourselves having this experience of whatever that thing is. So the picture together with the feeling creates this program, this blueprint that then becomes a magnetic attractor. Then consciousness, because our consciousness is a portion of that which is expressing everything. And so what we hold in our consciousness, all the power of the universe comes through this and manifests. Some cases it comes very quickly, instantly. Some cases take time. It sort of percolates in the background until the conditions out in the world are right. And then it blossoms. Then it comes to fruition. But if we hold that thought, if we have that picture and that feeling, and we hold it deep inside, it is a program that will end up manifesting and blossoming into reality, whether we like it or not. And by the way, this is a law of manifestation. This is a law of the universe, a law like gravity. Okay, if we drop the rock will hit the ground. It doesn't float up. It doesn't go across. It goes straight down because gravity is an attractive force, and we can't do anything about that. We have to live with the law of gravity until we figure out how to levitate or something. But for now, that's a law. And in the same way, this law of holding a picture and having a feeling, this is a law that is just like gravity. It works whether we like it or not, whether we understand it or not. It just works. So if we hold a picture that is not useful, that is negative, that is fearful, so we have a picture of some problem or something that might happen that would be terrible, and we have a strong feeling, oh man, I could just imagine, what if that happened, you know? What if I come around the corner and there's a bear right there, and you know, and or something is challenging. If I have a picture and a feeling, then this becomes a magnetic attractor. And so I can create problems for myself as easy as I can create prosperity and health, you know, and good things. So it's wise for us to be conscious, to be mindful of what it is that we're imagining and what it is that we're feeling, so that we can work in harmony with these laws. And I remember, I've had many, many experiences with this creative imagination, with this process. I remember being 15 years old, and I was out on a hot summer day in front of my father's house with these little hand clippers trimming the lawn. You know, we'd already run the lawnmower, and now the little edging part, and it's down on your hands and knees, and clippers, clippers, clippers. 15-year-old kid, you know, got to keep them busy, so why not? So I'm out there on the street with the clippers clipping along the edge of the grass, and my neighbor down the street, who's 19, comes driving by in his 1957 Corvette with the top off and a beautiful girlfriend, and I'm out there hot and sweaty and doing something I really don't want to be doing, and I see this guy go by, and radio's blasting some rock and roll in this, you know, cool sports car. And I remember thinking, wow, you know, that's got to be the best life possible. I can't imagine anything better than that. This is, you know, this is the ultimate. I remember that picture and that feeling, okay? So, but then I let it go. You know, we get distracted. We go off and do whatever we do. 4 years later, when I was 19 years old, opportunity came for me to buy a nice red 1957 Corvette, and with a big, powerful motor in it, and so this was the fulfillment. Many years later, I put that together. I remembered the time when I put that desire into the ethers, and I remember when it came to pass, which was completely disconnected, but something in the back, something in the subconscious had held that image, that feeling, and it manifested, it came to fruition at the time and place when it was appropriate. Okay? So, and this is what happens to us. Where we are right now, in our life, where we live, how we're spending our time, who we spend our time with, every aspect of our life started off as an imagination and a feeling. We are living out the fulfillment of all the dreams we've ever had right now, for good or not so useful, you know. So we can think about that. I mean, we can think about how did I get where I am right now? And you can remember when you made the decision to move to this area, when you made the decision to get involved with this relationship, when you made the decision to take this kind of a job. You know, where did that come from? So part of this is from this dharma, from our innate intelligence that is drawing us to be in work in harmony with life. Some of it is coming from, you know, ideas that come up to us and imaginings and circumstances and events that are really not particularly useful that we have accepted, bought into, you know, listening to the guy on the news or the next door neighbor. And one thing we should be very conscious and be very aware of, and that is there's something in the way that the mind, brain, body, it's all one thing, the mind, brain, body operates, the way it works, and that is if we're not intentionally doing something, if we're not focusing our attention, if we don't have a specific project, the mind goes into something called default mode. The mind, brain goes into this default mode. Default mode is where it starts processing and it pays attention to things that are bubbling up from within, as well as the circumstances, the events, the things that are happening around us. And it mostly wants to go 80% toward what's wrong. To be critical, to be judgmental, to be negative. So this is what happens. When we're not intentionally thinking, the mind starts to worry about all the possible things that can go wrong and all the upsets. And so, and most people, the normal people, not us here, we're okay, but normal, you know, the normal way of thinking is fragmented and blurred. And, you know, the mind just jumps around from one thing to another. It's like you're living in kind of a dream state, semi-dream state. This is how most people operate. They feel like they're victims of fate. Things are just happening, and I have to keep reacting to all these happenings. And the mind is jumping from this thing to that thing, unfocused, blurred. Occasionally, we have a good day. Occasionally, we have a good time. In between, we're worried, anxious, upset, you know, dealing with one thing after another, you know. And it doesn't have to be that way. And as we start to take control of this process, as we start to learn to be a little bit more focused, the next thing that happens is the mind starts to become obsessed. So things come along and they grab our attention, they enchant us. It's like little magic spells, and we become obsessed with this thing or that thing, this condition. And some of the obsessions are useful. You know, we can be very obsessed with a project or a hobby, you know, or some of the obsessions can be very non-useful. They can be habits of thinking, they can be addictions, you know, and they can, you know, we can get stuck in these things. We can get addicted to the news, you know, habituated, obsessed. Oh, what's next? We can be obsessed with the Republican Party or the Democratic Party. I'm obsessed with, you know, where the team that I've signed up for. And when I'm obsessed with this, I can see very clearly everything that has to do that's supportive of my obsession, and I can see very clearly, I can see nothing that is the opposite of that. So we have this tribal mentality that can come up as a result of this obsession. Focused attention, but focused on the wrong stuff. Obsessive, compulsive. You know, we have to shop, we have to watch television, we have to do things that keep us going. You know, we do this as sort of self-medication. If we do the right stuff, we get the dopamine and we get the serotonin and we feel better. But this comes from as a result of this these spells that we become under, this obsessive compulsive behavior. The next thing that happens is we can learn to focus our attention. And when we learn to focus our attention intentionally on something that's useful, like our spiritual process, you know, our spiritual awakening process, so we can focus our attention, we can meditate on a regular basis, we can do the things that are useful and supportive, so we can practice being living in harmony with everyone and everything. We can practice these things, and in this way, start to focus our attention on what's useful. It still can be challenging because we make the effort to be spiritual. We make the effort to do the right thing. We make the effort to live in the right way. And this sort of pushes the pendulum. And we get to a certain point and then we go, that's enough. No, I give up. And then we go back and the pendulum swings the other way and we get back involved in all the stuff until all the stuff sort of is not... It's not fulfilling. We're still having these challenges and we still recognize that we have had some times when we were really in a better space. And so then we move the pendulum back and we start to meditate on a regular basis again. We read our spiritual texts. We do the things that are useful for us. And so the pendulum swings until we sort of like, I'm just not that good. I can't be that good for that long. I have to go have some fun, you know. So we have this pendulum swinging back and forth until we finally become really established in this dharma, in this righteous way of living. And there is a sort of a recipe for this. The recipe is to be harmlessness, to be truthful, to be non-stealing, that is not taking things that are not ours by right of consciousness, to be taking care of our energy, that is to make sure that we're not wasting our energy from our body and our energy and resources, money and time and all these things. So we're conservative as far as our energy resources go, and we don't expect people to give us things. We're not grasping. We're able to take care of ourselves. We feel confident in ourselves. So these are ways of harmoniously living, and if we practice those, then what happens is we find that our life becomes very easy, that we are naturally moving in harmony with this unfolding expressive process, and life becomes very pleasant. So harmlessness, truthfulness, non-stealing, conservation of energy, non-grasping, also to be purity of mind, environment, body, you know, to keep everything clean and healthy, and contentment. To be content all the time. Just like, this is fine, I'm okay. So I don't have to be grasping, and I don't have to be constantly manipulating and pushing the world around. I can be okay, you know, contentment. So we can practice these things in order to move in harmony, with this dharma, with this right action, right living. And by the combination of right living, wealth, having what we need so that our comfort is taken care of, having our desires easily met and fulfilled, the three of those then support the movement to the last step, which is liberation. Full liberation of consciousness. That is, that we're no longer attached, no longer controlled by anything outside. We are self-aware. That is, I'm aware of my nature, self with a capital S, aware of what I am, and aware of this larger reality, what God is, and aware of the relationship between myself and God. And so we become realized. To be realized is to have the full knowledge and experience of whatever it is that we're looking at. To be self-realized means that we have knowledge of the self and experience of our true nature. Unlimited, we are before we're born, we are after the body wears out and passes, We are pure consciousness, immortal. We are an aspect, a ray of this expressive reality, part of God, inseparable. Not part like a part of a car that you can take one off and replace it with something else, but part of it, just like a rose is part of a bush, inseparable. You can't imagine the rose without the bush. It doesn't exist, you see. The rose is a blossom, and at the same time, the leaves and the thorns and the branches and the roots, they're all rose, you see. We are all expressions coming out of, expressions of this one reality that we call God, inseparable. And we can come into this awareness, this realization, this feeling, this experience of our nature as an aspect of God, inseparable from that. This is what all the great spiritual teachers have always said. They say, you're already it. You're already this expression. You're already God, you see, in expression. But we don't know that because we are identified with all these ideas and all these thoughts and all these circumstances. We think all this stuff is real, and our attention keeps going out and being identified with that. In this process, we learn to turn the attention back within and to wake up and to rest in this awareness of being, existence being what we are, our true nature. And because it's already here, this is not a big thing. This can happen very easily and very naturally. It just has to be something that we give some importance to. We have to make a choice. I'm going to choose to be fully awake, and if I'm fully awake and living in harmony with nature and with life, everything gets to be easy. I can be happy, healthy, prosperous all the time. Starting now. What was this song we heard? History starts now. Each moment is a new beginning. Each moment we have the opportunity to choose to be brand new, to be awake, to live consciously, mindfully, to live fully in harmony with life. We can just make that choice and start right now. See? A new beginning. You have permission to erase everything that's ever happened and to start over right now to be the person you always dreamed you could be and to have the life you've always dreamed you could have. Why not? See? So our goals in life, dharma, right action, living in harmony, artha, wealth, having whatever it is that we need to be prosperous, to be acknowledged, to have respect, to have decent relationships, kama, to enjoy, to have pleasure, and to have our desires, our life-enhancing desires, the things that are useful, easily met. Just as they come up, they should come to us without any work, without any strain or struggle, and finally to be fully liberated. Not victims, but to feel ourselves fully in harmony with God and with this expressive reality. This is available. Okay, so everybody sign up for that? All right, so let's just take one more quick minute. Take a nice deep breath. And acknowledge that our true nature is immortal, infinite, an expression of God. Perfect and whole already. Feel this right to the atoms of the core of your essence of being. I am perfect. I am whole. I am one with God. Amen. Thank you.